Kijai, Navadvip Mayapur Dhamma Kijai, Jagannath Puri Dhamma Kijai, Gangame Jamuna Devi Kijai, Bhakti Devi Kijai, Tulsi Maharani Kijai, Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda Kijai, Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Sri Prabhupada. Imam Vishnu Purana Krishna Prasthana Uttara. Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Sarasvati Devi. Gauravani Pichani Yubasay Sisamayani Paskachai De Satami. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Talaparakamam. Sri Guru Vaishnavam Sri Rupam Sagrujatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Sam Sajivam. Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sadhana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vikamstra. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. January 4th, 2010 in Vrindavan, and we're reading from Bhagavad Gita 9:22. Ananyas chintayanto mam ye jana paripasate te samnitya biyuktanam yogakshemam vadamyaham ananyaschintayantomam ye jana paripasate te samnitya biyuktanam yogakshemam vadamyaham. Concentrating mam on me, yay, those who janaha, persons, paripasate, properly worship tesham, of them, nitya, always, abhiyuktanam, fixed in devotion, yoga, requirements, shemam, protection. Vahami, carry, aham, I. But those are the, so we're starting with but. So this is contrasting to what? The last two verses. People who are just wanting to go to the heavenly planets and are thinking that they're going to get their happiness in something material. So it's a contrast to that. But those who always worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form. To them, I carry what they lack, and I preserve what they have. I'd like a minute before we look at the purport to turn to chapter 2, text 45. And I'd like you to look at the last line of the Sanskrit in chapter 2, text 45, and the last line of the Sanskrit in this verse, chapter 9, 22. Vishwana Chakravarti Thakur relates these two verses in his commentary. And can anyone please tell me what do these two verses have to do with one another? Please look at chapter 2, text 45, and chapter 9, text 22, the last line of the Sanskrit in each verse. And if someone could please tell me why we're looking at these two verses together. In this book, chapter 2, text 245 is on page 119. Just the Sanskrit of the verses. Just the Sanskrit of the verses, the last line of each verse. Page 119. Shema. You have Shema in both, and the other word that you have in both is?
New Yoga.
Okay, New Yoga, Shema. And the other says Yoga, Shema, Vaham, Yaham. So in 245, if you look at Nir Yoga Kshema, how does Srila Prabhupada translate that in the word for word? 245, Nir Yoga Kshema, he translates us?
From ideas.
Of gain and protection. And if we look at this, 922, Yoga here is translating as requirements and Kshema again, protection. So, how can the devotee be free from all anxieties, as Prabhupada says in the translation of 245, for gain and safety? How does the devotee give up his anxieties for gain and safety? Because yoga kshema baham yaham, who's taking care of it?
Krishna's
personally taking care of it. Okay, so we're going to look at these two verses in tandem. Let's read Srila Prabhupada's purport to 922. By the way, does anyone here ever worry about gain and safety? Okay. Purport. One who is unable to live for a moment without Krishna consciousness cannot but think of Krishna 24 hours a day, being engaged in devotional service by hearing, chanting, remembering, offering prayers, worshipping, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, rendering other services, cultivating friendship, and surrendering fully to the Lord. So Srila Prabhupada just described the 9 processes of devotional service. Such activities are all auspicious and full of spiritual potencies, which make the devotee perfect in self-realization, so that his only desire is to achieve the association of the Supreme Personality of God. It's his only desire. How can I associate with Krishna? Such a devotee undoubtedly approaches the Lord without difficulty. This is called yoga. So here Srila Prabhupada's giving a definition of yoga, in that the gain is approaching Krishna without difficulty. By the mercy of the Lord, such a devotee never comes back to this material condition of life. Kshema refers to the merciful protection of the Lord. The Lord helps the devotee to achieve Krishna consciousness by yoga, and when he becomes fully Krishna conscious, the Lord protects him from falling down to a miserable conditioned life. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada is talking about yoga and kshema as what?
Yoga, linking with the Supreme.
Yes, and kshema as?
Kshema, protection.
From
anxiety and fall down.
Fall down into materialistic life. So we could think of yoga kshema in regard to 245 and in regard here as your winter clothes, your money, your house. But it also has another meaning on a transcendental platform. We're going to look at both meanings. Ananyas chintayanto mam ye jana paripasthite tesham nitya abhiyuktanam yogakshema vahamyaham. But those who always worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack and I preserve what they have. So I'm going to look at this yogakshema. So yoga is to get something, and then shema is to protect that thing from loss. So if you think for a minute, examine perhaps what occupies our thoughts and feelings. It's generally wanting to get something and then wanting to protect it. And sometimes lamenting over what we failed to protect. Sometimes lamenting over, I got that thing and I lost it. Now I'm going to be really careful to protect it. So about a year ago, I was in the Middle East, and after giving a lecture, I was walking down some marble stairs. There was some water on one of the stairs, and I slipped and fell and broke my foot, which was not very much fun, to have a broken foot and had to have it in a cast. And I got to be one of those wheelchair passengers on the airlines. And I started noticing, once my foot was healed, that I was walking up and down stairs differently than I used to. I just noticed that I was being much more careful whenever I went up and down the stairs. I thought, why am I walking on the stairs like that? Oh, I'm trying to protect my foot. So we've had so much experience that there's things that we've lost, there's things that haven't been protected. So we're usually absorbed in this. How can I get what I need? How can I get the food that I need? How can I get the warmth that I need? Or in a couple of months it will be, how can I get the cool air that I need? How can I get the friends that I need? How can I get the work that I need? How can I get the different things that I need? And then how can I protect those things? How can I protect my friendships? How can I protect my clothes? How can I protect my money? That's a big one. How can I protect my money? How can I protect my possessions? My position? So that's generally what occupies our thoughts. Chintayanta. What we concentrate on. But instead, we're advised, don't do that. Concentrate instead on Krishna. Always think about Krishna's form. Have that be one's anxiety. And Krishna will take care of not only getting what we need, but protecting it. A radical thought. For most people, that's a very radical thought. Well, how do I do that practically? What am I supposed to do? Just like sit out in the forest and Krishna's just going to drop food in my mouth like some mother bird feeding her babies. So let's look first at 245. Go back to that verse. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, in commenting on 245, on this Niryoga Kshema Atmavan, and you notice Prabhupada is saying here, Atmavan means established in the self. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur talks about Atmavan as being fixed in the intelligence that Krishna has given us. Basically, being fixed in this intelligence we're learning from Bhagavad Gita, the instructions of the Acharyas. And what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says we should give up is all sadhana for dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. So instead of doing some activities on the material platform, I only do activities on the spiritual platform. And Baladeva Vijayabhushana says something really radical in his commentary on 245. He says, make no attempt to gain what you do not have, and make no attempt to protect what you already possess. Wow. So does that mean I don't lock my door? Does that mean I don't put my money in a safe place? And he asked the questions, well, what about hunger and thirst? So I'm thirsty right now. I'm going to make an attempt. I'm going to move my hand over to this cup. I'm going to remove the lid. I'm going to take the cup. I'm going to put it to my mouth and pour the water into my mouth. That's an attempt, isn't it? To gain something that I don't already have. And most of us make an attempt to get food. You ever think about how much attempt you're making to get food? I mean, even if it's just to notice when prasadam is served, and to make sure that you're there and not too late, and you're sitting down, or maybe it's, you know, you're making the attempt by earning money and going to the store. And Baladev says, if one meditates on Paramatma, Atmavan, so here Prabhupada's translating Atmavan as established in the self, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, Atmavan as being fixed in Krishna-given intelligence, and Baladev Vijabhushan as meditating on the Paramatma. He said, he's the supporter of the universe, and he'll take care of your bodily maintenance. Now we know that story of the personality that Prahlad Maharaj met, who was really doing this on the external platform. He was living in the forest. He was just lying on the ground. He didn't do anything. And yet, he wasn't skinny. He was well built. He was obviously eating. And Prahlad Maharaj said, how are you eating? He said, food comes to me. I don't have to make any endeavor. Of course, this also happened to the hunter Magrari. That the hunter Magrari was asked by his guru, Narada Muni. He said, I want you to please throw away your bow. He said, I won't give you any spiritual instruction until you throw away your bow. And he said, well, if I throw away my bow, how will I live? Narada said, don't worry, I'll supply you with food. And so many people came to bring food to Magrari, it was too much. He had to refuse most of it. He said, people are bringing enough food for 10 people. I only need for 2 people. You don't need to send so much. And I think that all of us have had experience that if we really dedicate ourselves to Krishna, that Krishna takes care of us somehow or other, not necessarily the way that we would like all the time, but that somehow or other we are taken care of. So that's the point there, especially in 245, for the maintenance of the body, looking at yoga and shama in terms of the maintenance of the body and mind. That don't worry about bodily and mental maintenance. Be fixed in the self. Be fixed in Krishna's instructions. Depend on the Paramatma. And now going back to today's verse of 9:22. So here Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is speaking again in terms of bodily maintenance. He says that the devotees may ask, well, why would a devotee ask Krishna to maintain them? Why would a devotee say, I'm just going to depend on you, Krishna, and you're going to maintain and protect everything that I have? That's not very surrendered and loving, is it? The devotee should just say, Krishna, I'll serve you, and whatever you want to do with me is okay. Whether you maintain me or not, Marabhi Rakabhi, Sampari Vipani, whatever you want to do with me. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, no, it's not that the devotees are asking for that. Krishna naturally wants to do that. He said, like the father. The little children don't have to go to the father and say, Father, please take care of me. He does it naturally. Without having to be asked. Maybe this isn't so true anymore, but used to be that a man understood, oh, I'm the one who has the responsibility to maintain my wife and children. It's interesting, I was talking with one devotee about this and saying that it's not necessarily that hundreds of years ago that women didn't do anything to contribute financially to the family. They may have helped in the fields or they were helping weaving cloth or so many things. But the man took the mental responsibility. It's my responsibility to make sure that the family is maintained. The woman didn't have to have any anxieties. I mean, I still remember that time. I don't think it exists so much anymore. When the woman could just say, well, I don't need to worry about it. My husband's going to take care of things. And certainly it's like that, hopefully to a large extent, for the children. My father's going to take care of things. Or Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur said, it's like the man who will carry a woman on his shoulders if she's tired. He does it out of love. Or the parents carrying their children. The children are falling asleep and the parents carry them. It's not out of obligation. It's not that Krishna's doing that out of obligation. So that's on the level of bodily maintenance. But also, this understanding of yogic shema is one that Srila Prabhupada emphasizes in this purport, that we're not talking anymore about money and warm clothes and friendship and status and a good job that gives one satisfaction. But we're talking about a much higher level of gain and protection. And this is also very interesting, that Krishna is saying, if you just think about me and you focus on me, I'll take care not only of your money and your home and your food, I'll take care of your spiritual advancement also. That if you just meditate on me, make me the goal of life, concentrate on me, I will bring you to me and I'll protect you from falling. So both of those things are there. Again, we see material examples of this, like Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur is giving that of the father, of the lover. But it's true even in a good job. If you work for a good company, if you work for the company, they'll take care of you. Have you ever had experience like that, working for a good boss? They'll pay your salary, they'll give you vacation time, they'll give you what you need for your work. You don't have to worry about it. You can focus on your job. I had one very wonderful experience in Krishna consciousness where the devotee who was running the project where I was working at Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he was so attentive to take care of everyone's spiritual and material needs that we didn't have to worry about. All I had to do was focus on my service. I never had to think about, is there going to be an arrangement for me to be Krishna conscious? Is there going to be an arrangement for me to get my food and my clothing and my shelter? I could put it aside completely. Isn't it nice when you have that kind of an arrangement? You ever been in a situation like that? Where you could just focus on what you were on your service? And everything else was taken care of. So Krishna's saying that actually we can do that with him. We can focus on connecting with him and he'll take care of us both materially and spiritually. So now, does this mean that we don't make any external endeavor, either spiritually or materially? Because it can sound like that. Like Bal David Jibushana says, make no attempt to attain what you do not have. Make no attempt to protect what you already possess. So if we take that in a literal external sense for both things like our food and our shelter and things such as our spiritual advancement, because this verse can be taken in either of those senses, would that mean that we do nothing? In fact, that was what Arjuna kept thinking in the Bhagavad Gita. Over and over again, Arjuna asked that question. Well, why am I fighting then? You're telling me to perform Buddha Yoga, you're telling me to give up abominable work. So I should just go and do nothing. And Krishna will say, no, nobody can even maintain their body without work. So what does this mean? What does it mean? Don't make any endeavor for yoga kshema. Vahamyaham, Krishna will take care of that. But we see that devotees do make some endeavor. But the difference is the difference in quality and purpose. I really like Bhaktivinoda Thakur's songs where he talks about, Krishna, this home belongs to you, my family members are your servants, and I am maintaining them as my service. You know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Sanatana Goswami, whenever the pilgrims from Bengal come to Vrindavan, you should take care of them. If they come and they're poor, then you give them blankets, you give them clothing. If they've come from Bengal, they're not used to the food in Vrindavan, then you should make sure they get rice, get the food that they're used to. So we see our endeavor to get things as a service. Not only for others, but even for this body. Now you all know when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Sanatana Goswami, when he was thinking he was so fallen that he should give up his body in Jagannath Puri, and Lord Chaitanya said, but you've already given your body to me. How can you destroy another's property? He said to Haridas Thakur, why don't you speak some sense to him? Explain to him. You can't destroy another's property. What kind of religious principle is that? So if I see that this body is Krishna's property, if I see that the other people I may be responsible for, if I have family members or other devotees that Krishna is giving me some responsibility for, then I see that my endeavor to get food or to get clothing is really a service and is part of my meditating on Krishna, my concentrating on Krishna. What is the difference? Ahankara vimudatma kartaha niti manite. The materialist is thinking, I am the doer, I am getting my food, I am getting my clothing, I am getting the things for my gain, and I am protecting them. so that I can enjoy them, Siddham. I am the bogey, I am the enjoyer of my things. Whereas a devotee is thinking, I'm just thinking about Krishna, and Krishna's asked me to do this. My guru wants me to do this. Krishna wants me to do this. To serve my guru and Krishna, I take care of my health. To serve my guru and Krishna, I take care of my family members, or I take care of whoever I'm supposed to take care of, the other brahmacharis in the ashram, or whatever my responsibilities are. That's part of just thinking of Krishna. I'm not the doer. And the same with spiritual life. If I think I'm the one who's doing my spiritual advancement, I'm the one who's taking myself back to Godhead. That's like the mystic yogis. I'm going to sit down, okay, I have my goal, I'm going to meditate, and I'm going to bring the kundalini up to the heart chakra. And that's, they're fixed on a particular goal, and they see themselves as the doer. Whereas the devotee doesn't seem like that. So why is the devotee engaging in the process of bhakti, as Prabhupada's talking about here? Well, on the higher level, they're doing it because they're so much in love with Krishna, they can't help doing it. If I love somebody, of course I think about them. Of course I want to be friends with them. Of course I want to see them. But if I'm practicing sadhana bhakti, I'm doing this because, again, Krishna's telling me to do it. He's saying perform sadhana bhakti. Guru's telling me to perform sadhana bhakti. And because Krishna's very reciprocal. When the devotees talk about Krishna, then naturally, he enlightens them from within their heart. It's not that I think that I'm the doer, that I'm the one making spiritual advancement. But I have confidence that if I engage in the process, that Krishna will take care of my spiritual advancement. He'll take me back to Godhead. He'll keep me from falling down. And there's different analogies for that. You know, there's this whole fighting in the Sri Sampradaya as to whether we're monkeys or kittens. You've heard of this, right? You see the mother monkey. She's carrying her baby monkey, but the baby monkey has the responsibility of holding on. I mean, the mother takes some responsibility. And with the kitten takes some responsibility because the kitten can't fight. The kitten is submitting, but the mother cat is taking the main responsibility. But actually, it really isn't that big of a difference. If you look at both of those cases, you'll see that both the mother and the baby are doing something in both cases. Because the rat doesn't cooperate with the cat. The rat runs away from the cat. The rat is fighting the cat. Whereas the kitten willingly submits. The kitten's still doing something. And the mother monkey is still doing something. The mother monkey has to be aware. Have you ever had carried a little child on your back? Anybody here ever carried a child on your back? So you still have to do something. It's not that you just go about your business as if there's no child on your back. You have to balance yourself differently. So I think it's kind of a false controversy. It's more like a dance. You know, two people are dancing together. So one is leading and one is following, but they're reciprocating with one another. And that's how Krishna describes it, as a reciprocation. That the devotees talk about him and think about him, and therefore he enlightens them. But not with the mood that I'm doing something. So the devotee makes some endeavor to eat, and makes some endeavor to get water, and makes some endeavor to put clothes on their body, unless they're on a very high platform. And it's not their service. It's their service to be an avadutta. And the devotee makes endeavor in sadhana bhakti, but never thinking that I'm the doer, thinking this is my duty, this is my service. This is my service to Krishna. And it's my service to Krishna to take care of the external material things, but you know, it's up to Krishna if I gain anything, and it's up to Krishna if anything's protected. You can make all the endeavor, and a fire can come and take everything away in a moment. And I do my spiritual duty in sadhana bhakti, but my advancement and my protection is also in Krishna's hand. I'm not so powerful that I can protect myself, nor so powerful that I can make spiritual advancement. Then another point in this verse is Krishna saying, aham, I'm doing it personally. So this is a contrast to the 8th chapter. You know, remember in the 8th chapter, Krishna talked about the situation of going back to Godhead? Or getting liberated, going to the Brahman at least.
Where
Krishna was speaking about what were the circumstances that determined whether somebody took birth again or got liberated. Does anybody remember?
2 ways of passing from
this. 2 ways of passing from this world. And what were the conditions?
Light and one during dark, during the fire.
Right, okay. Light. So where the moon is, what season it is, what devatas are helping you. So here Krishna is saying, no, I'm doing it. For the devotee who's concentrating on me, it's not all these things. It's not whether you can raise the kundalini to your crown chakra. It's not how you're breathing through your nose. It's not any of those things. It's not whether you've got Ganesh over your door. Krishna's doing it. And this Krishna also says, if you turn to chapter 12, text 6 and 7, what's the ending there? If we look at the English, for them I am the swift deliverer from the ocean of birth and death. So this verse is again very similar to the one we're reading just now. Those who worship me, giving up all their activities unto me and being devoted to me without deviation, engage in devotional service and always meditating upon me, having fixed their minds upon me, O son of Pritha, for them I am the swift deliverer from the ocean of birth. So there was one commentator on the Bhagavad Gita who didn't believe that. He didn't believe that it was Krishna personally.
Shankaracharya.
You know, it's difficult to find out who it was. When Prabhupada talks about it, it sounds like he's saying Arjunacharya, but maybe he's saying Yamunacharya. But I'm not sure if it's Yamunacharya, because it involves a wife. And as far as I know, Yamunacharya renounced his wife when he became Yamunacharya. So I'm not sure who it is.
Maharaj Arjun Mishra, that's
it. Anyway, it was somebody who was a commentator on the Bhagavad Gita and who was living in South India. So when he was reading this verse, 922, Yogakshema Bahamyaham, he said, no, it can't be aham. It can't be Krishna personally. I mean, look it, okay? Everybody here gets something to eat regularly, right? None of you look like you're dying of starvation. But did Krishna personally come and give you that? Or was it just the brahmachari that was passing out the khichdi? So did Krishna personally give you all the chatters you're wearing? Or did you buy it from the shop? Or maybe somebody handed it to you? So it may seem, or your spiritual advancement, it may seem like, well, it wasn't Krishna personally, it was my spiritual master, or it was that senior devotee that I really liked, they said something and enlightened me, it wasn't Krishna. So this Bhagavad Gita commentator, he said, no, it wasn't Krishna. It was Krishna, but it's Krishna acting through his agents. He's not doing it personally. So in his Bhagavad Gita, he took his pen and he scratched out Vahamyaham. And then he went to take a bath. So while he was bathing, his wife was getting ready to cook. And there was a knock on the door. And these two very attractive young boys came, and they were carrying big baskets of fruit and vegetables and ghee and grains. And they were carrying it on a pole. You know, they had this pole, and they were basking on each other. And the woman saw they were very delicate young boys, and she said, why are you carrying this? Who's made such young, delicate boys like you carry this heavy load? And they said, oh, your husband has made us carry this. She said, my husband? He wouldn't do this. He wouldn't make little boys carry some heavy load. And they said, actually, not only did he make us carry it, but when we wouldn't take it right away, he beat us. My husband, he doesn't go around beating children. I said, just see, mother, look at our back. And she looked at the back and she saw these marks on their back from beating. And she was very upset. She says, we have to talk to my husband about this. Please stay, he'll be back from bathing any minute. They said, no, we're not going to stay. If we stay, then maybe he'll beat us again. So they left all the valuable food there and they departed. And then her husband came back and she was a little upset. She said, what kind of a man are you anyway? I thought you were a pious man, reading Bhagavad Gita, commenting on the Bhagavad Gita, and you made these two young, delicate boys carry this heavy, all this heavy food here, and you beat them because they wouldn't pick it up right away, and they had marks all over their back. And he said, what boys? And she starts describing the boys, and he said, oh, you can understand. Yes, Krishna brings it personally. So Krishna is personally, for those of us who surrender to Krishna, Krishna is personally taking care of both our material and spiritual needs. That's the confidence. Utsaha nishchayadarya. Enthusiastic, patient, and confident. That therefore the devotee has confidence that Krishna will take care of my material and spiritual needs. All I need to worry about is serving him. He'll make sure that whatever I need, I get. And he'll even protect what I have. And whatever I need spiritually, I'll also get. He'll put me in touch with the right people. He'll put me in the right places. He'll put me through the right life experiences. So that I'll come closer to him. And he'll make sure that as long as I'm meditating on him and following the process, that I don't lose it. Now, of course, we can be fools. I mean, if you want to go around blaspheming devotees, then you may have a mad elephant enter into your garden. Although Krishna is giving us everything, we also do need to reciprocate. We need to accept his giving. Even the kitten has to accept being carried. So it's not that we don't do anything, but we're not the doer. Now, if I help you plant a garden and help you water it, and then I say, okay, put a fence up and don't let any mad elephants run through, and you go get a mad elephant. You know, we don't see very many mad elephants today, do we? We don't see very many elephants today, but male elephants go through a period of like heat. One of the few animals where the male does that, and when a male elephant, it's what's it called? Must. Then they go completely crazy. They're completely uncontrollable. Even the older, stronger elephants will get out of the way. So we have some responsibility. It is possible that we can greatly damage our progress. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says, once one has taken initiation, he says, basically one will achieve success. So it's only in very, very rare cases that a person will not achieve success. Of course, how fast that happens, a lot of that depends upon us. But we have faith that Krishna is taking us. So if we really believe this, if we really believe that Krishna personally is going to take care of yoga kshema on both levels, he's personally going to take care of whatever we need to gain and whatever we have, protecting it, then our only anxiety becomes, how can I serve Krishna? How can I think of Krishna? I mean, again, even materially, if you're working for a good company, if the company is going to pay you a livable salary, and they're going to give you vacation time, and they'll even throw you a birthday party, and they'll give you a nice chair to sit on, then you don't have to worry about that anymore. You can just do your work. You can forget about it. I was once brought to Denmark for 3 weeks to work on a project for the Mayapur temple. This was about 12 years ago. And I remember just being taken care of. I didn't have to worry about food, I didn't have to worry about the rent, I didn't have to worry about anything. I was just given full facility to focus on my service, so I could work. I was working like probably 14 hours a day on this project. And that's basically what Krishna's doing. He's saying, all right, you're doing the most important work. I mean, Krishna's supplying everyone. He's supplying the birds. He's supplying the pigs. You ever see a skinny pig in Vrindavan? And I don't think anybody goes around feeding the pigs. I see people feeding the cows. I see programs to feed the cows. I see programs even to feed the monkeys. Certain places you can go, you can buy monkey food. I know people who feed the dogs. I have never heard of anybody who takes care of the pigs in Vrindavan. I know that there's a rich woman who takes care of the dogs in Vrindavan. But have you ever seen a skinny pig in Vrindavan? Never. So Krishna's taking care of all the, you know, the ants and the bees and everything. But particularly someone who surrenders to him, he's going to take care of them. don't need that anxiety. And on both levels. Jayananda was once asked, how do you make spiritual advancement? He said, I don't know, I'm too busy doing service. Like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, don't try to see God. Act in such a way that God will want to see you. Very, very simple. I mean, who are you likely to see? Somebody who's knocking on your door all the time, or someone who's doing something so wonderful that you want to see? So we should examine, where is my anxiety? What am I worrying about? Am I worrying about my gain in protection? Or am I worrying about how I'm going to get closer to Krishna? Prabhupada says here, his only desire is to achieve the association of the Supreme Personality of God. It's one point, it's a recurring theme in the Bhagavad Gita, this one point in this. All I need is Krishna. When I have Krishna, I have everything. Again, that doesn't necessarily mean externally that a householder man says, well, I don't have to work anymore. I mean, could be. Like Srivas, who had his 1-2-3 proposal. You all know that? Lord Chaitanya said to Srivas, you're a married man, how are you eating? He said, well, I have 1-2-3 method. That if there's no food that comes on the third day, then I'll just give up my life. And Lord Chaitanya says, no. Lakshmi may beg, but I'll always make sure that you get something to eat. So there are certainly some devotees like that. That Magrari who was just sitting and chanting by the Ganga. But like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also told some devotees, it's your job to earn material and spiritual wealth. So that may be somebody's service. It may be someone's service. This verses don't necessarily mean, again, oh, well, I'm not going to chant my rounds now because Krishna's going to take care of my spiritual advancement. I'm not going to pick up a cup of water because Krishna is going to pour the water in my mouth whether I pick up the cup or not. That's not what it means. It means that I stop thinking that I'm the doer, I realize that Krishna is taking care of me, and my anxiety is how to serve Krishna, and I see these other things as part of my service. It is part of my service to chant my rounds with attention. It's part of my service to take care of the deities. It's part of my service to read the scriptures. It's part of my service to make sure my body's clean. But Krishna's taking care of all my gain and safety. Give up all, what does it say in 245? How did Prabhupada translate that? Be free from all dualities and from all anxieties for gain and safety. So what, one gives up all, you give up the anxiety. I don't have an anxiety about it anymore. I have an anxiety. It's not that I live free from anxiety. I have an anxiety. What's my anxiety? What does Prabhupada say is my anxiety here? How will I get Krishna's association?
By loving him.
Yes, that's my anxiety. So my anxiety stops being, will I get enough money? When I go back to my room, will somebody have robbed me? Will the monkeys steal my oranges? Has anyone here read Radhana Swami's book? Anybody read Radhana Swami's book? So I really like one, I like many sections of it, but one section that applies to this is when he was doing his own meditation on a rock in the middle of the Ganga. And he had taken a vow for 1 month that all he would eat was one carrot a day and Ganga water. That's not a lot. He was a young man, a young man to live on one carrot and some water. So at the end of the month, he was going to break his fast, and he had no money. Someone came up and gave him a donation of 1 rupee. 1 rupee. So somebody was selling peanuts. So with his 1 rupee, he went and bought a bag of peanuts. And as he was about to eat the peanuts, a monkey came and grabbed the bag. And some peanuts spilled on the ground. He thought, at least I'll get the peanuts that are on the ground. And another monkey came, or the same monkey came, and picked up all the peanuts on the ground. So how to tolerate such a thing? You have to have no anxieties. And even says in the Bible, the Lord gives, the Lord takes away, blessed be the name of the Lord. It's to give up anxieties for gain and safety. That's Krishna's business. It's Krishna's business. The mood is that, again, of the traditional wife, which I don't know. As time goes by, I wonder more and more if anybody can even relate to this. But like Sita with Ramchandra, if he's going to be crowned king tomorrow, she follows him. If he's going to go to the forest in exile, she follows. She doesn't have anxieties for gain and safety. Her anxiety is just, how can I be in the association of the Supreme Lord? If I'm going to become the queen, or if I'm going to, you know, exile was, in those days, exile was what happened if you want to punish someone with death, but for some reason you don't want to actually kill them. Exile was like a death penalty. It wasn't like today, you just go to another temple and you're thrown out of one temple and you just go to another one. So she had no anxieties. Krishna wants to give, Krishna wants to take away. He's responsible for my gain, he's responsible for my protection, materially and spiritually, on both levels. That if I follow this process, he's definitely going to give me bhakti yoga. And he's definitely going to give me kshema, protection from falling down. And if I do my duty, as one devotee said to me the other day, she said, I don't worry about artha. If I do dharma, artha will come. If I just do what I'm supposed to do, my duties, then gain will come. So for us, we can examine, where's my anxiety? We can't live without anxiety. We can't live without some desires, without something you want. Our process is not to become, as Prabhupada would say, a stone. So if I give up all anxieties for gain and safety, because yoga kshema bhamyaham, because Krishna is going to take care of the gain and safety, does that mean I'm just like, oh, shanti, shanti, I have no anxieties because Krishna is taking care of me? No. It means, when will I see Krishna? When will I see Krishna? When will Krishna be happy with me? When will Guru be happy with me? When will my spiritual master be happy with me? When will all the members of the disciplic succession be happy with me? When will Rupa Goswami be happy with me? When will Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Vichananda be happy with me? When will Radha and Krishna and their associates be happy with me? That's my anxiety. And the other, that's Krishna's worry. Not my worry. Not my business. And then one becomes actually happy. So what do I worry about? That's the question to ask ourselves. How do I define gain? How do I define protection? Yoga is gain, kshama is protection. What am I looking to gain? What am I looking to protect? Am I looking at things in the material world that I'm the doer? Am I looking to, that I want to gain Krishna's association and have that be protected? And where do I put my energy? On pleasing Krishna? Or I'm trying to be the doer to gain and protect things in this world. And that we can examine within ourselves. What do I worry about? Where is my anxiety? Where is my desires? Questions, comments, additions, subtractions, chastisements. This is a really nice verse. Whenever you worry about anything, you can just say yoga kshema bhamya. Whenever you find yourself worrying about anything, yoga kshema bhamya. Carry what I lack and preserve what I have. Mic. You have a mic.
In terms of doing our service, in terms of that, if, just for instance, you're distributing a book, and so I don't know how to do this, but Krishna will provide what I lack, preserve what I have, or anything that can we, how can we see this for us in terms of
Well, in terms of anything that you do, why just distributing a book? I mean, one of the qualities of a devotee is daksha, expert. And Prabhupada said in Mumbai, I think it was 76, in regard to starting a brahmachari ashram there, he said, brahmachari means expert. So they should know something of everything and everything of something. That should be the training in the Gurukula for the children and for the brahmacharis in the ashram. So it's your duty. If you have some service to do, you're supposed to become expert in it. Whatever it is. If your duty is to distribute a book, or your duty is to clean the toilet, or your duty is to cook rice, or if your duty is to support your family, it doesn't matter what it is. You're supposed to become expert, and that might mean getting some training. That might mean going to somebody who knows more than you and saying, please show me how to do this. Please give me guidance, having some sort of mentor. It may mean reading a book. It may mean taking a course. We have book distribution courses. So that's our responsibility as a good servant.
We can depend on Krishna to help.
Well, look, Krishna is the ability. Krishna says he's the ability in man. He's the intelligence. So that means... And Krishna describes to the gopis at Kurukshetra that he's also the functions of the mind and the intelligence. So, of course, you're depending on Krishna. You're depending on Krishna even to say, I'm going to go get some training, and to walk to the class, and to have the intelligence to hear the class, and to put it into practice, and to stand there, and to open your mouth, and to have words come out, and Krishna's the sound of the ether. I mean, all of that's Krishna. There's no way in which you're independent in any of that. And ultimately, you're dependent on Krishna in the heart of the person to say, hey, that might be a really good idea to get that book. Check it out. So in so many ways, you're dependent on Krishna. But still, we do our duty as a servant. Not that we think we're the doer, but just as a way of expressing our love and our devotion. Is that okay? Anybody else?
Hey Krishna, thank you for the big class. I was wondering, where I come from, there's absolutely no spiritual inclination. Everyone is completely fixed on the idea that I do everything, you know, it's every man for himself.
Where you come from?
South Africa, well, Cape Town. People are very superficial and really think I'm the only one who's looking after myself, there's no one else. So if someone new comes to our temple, how do you explain this concept to them in a way to make them sort of believe it? Because it's hard to try and preach to someone who comes in who's totally dependent on themselves and tell them, oh, just don't worry, Krishna's going to look after you. Don't have any anxiety about anything. It's too far-fetched for them. So how do we sort of explain that to them on a level they will sort of believe, or how do you approach that situation?
Okay, so if I say I'm looking after myself, am I independent in looking after myself? What gives me the ability to look after myself? Well, I've got to have a mind and a body that works, right? Correct? Are you independent in having a mind and a body that works? Can you control whether or not your mind and body work? Is it up to you whether or not you get hit by a car today? Or whether you have a stroke or a heart attack? Is that within your control? Can you control whether or not some crazy person comes and hits you over the head with a pipe so they can steal 200 rupees out of your pocket? Can you control that? Where are you getting the ability to take care of yourself from? I mean, even if you want to take it at the most base level, I've got to have a body and mind that function. Everybody gets sick, right? Everybody's gotten sick in their life. Has everyone here gotten so sick that they couldn't function at least for a few hours? Has that happened? Everybody? Well, you couldn't do anything. You couldn't take care of yourself. Sometimes you get so sick your mind doesn't function. You ever had a high fever? Your mind doesn't even function. You have a very high fever, you start hallucinating and you can't even maintain consciousness. I don't have any control over that. If I had control over that, I'd never get sick. I don't say, well, I think today I'd like to be sick for an hour. No, but it happens. Well, to speak of accidents, like I said, I broke my foot. I didn't want to break my foot. When I broke my foot, guess what? I couldn't take care of myself anymore. I couldn't carry my bags through the airport anymore. I had to have someone else take me in a wheelchair. When I got to Mayapur, I couldn't wash my clothes. I couldn't clean my floor. I mean, maybe I could have figured out how to do it after some time. That wasn't under my control. So who's really maintaining us? The person who's maintaining us is the person who's giving the ability to our mind and body to function. And obviously, there's somebody else controlling that, not me. I have something to do with it. I'm one of the five factors of action, but I'm sure not the only. It's not even 20%. If I could control it, there would be no disease. There would be no car accidents. Correct? I don't think anybody says, I'd like to get in a car accident and become a quadriplegic who has, you know, a brain like a vegetable. And then let's take it a step further. Even if your body and mind works, can you necessarily take care of yourself? Isn't that dependent on whether or not there's rain? Otherwise, where am I going to get food? How can I get food without rain? Do you control rain? Do you really control a seed growing? I mean, we don't even know how it happens. Can you control whether you get a job? I know people who've been out of work for a year. So how are you taking care of yourself? You're not. There's somebody else taking care of you now. Just a question of whether or not you want to acknowledge it. Krishna consciousness means being aware of what's already there. That's all. It's the question of whether I'm in illusion or whether I'm in reality. The reality is that Krishna's already taking care of everybody. Who can maintain themselves independently? I mean, can anybody do that? Is that all right? It's pretty simple.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Thank you for a nice class, Madhavi. I just need to ask a question. Can you please explain how Krishna, it says in Bhagavatam, that Krishna shows his mercy to someone, he takes away everything from him. Can you please explain that in regard to this one?
It's a problem with talking to devotees, you know. His question was, well, Krishna also says in Bhagavatam that when Krishna shows special mercy, he takes everything away. Now, first of all, it's not that that's Krishna's policy for everybody all the time. Because, okay, I'm looking at everybody in this room. Is anybody here starving? Everybody looks like they're wearing clothes, and nobody looks like they're wearing nice clothes. People's faces are glowing. Everyone looks like they're eating. So either Krishna isn't merciful to anybody in this room, or obviously that's certain cases. And Prabhupada explains that when somebody wants to be Krishna conscious but is stubbornly attached to something that's hurting their Krishna consciousness, Krishna may take that away. But let's give a simple example. Are you married, man? Do you have any children? No. Anybody here have any children? You have children? Okay. So let's say it's time for your children to study. It's time for them to do their homework. And they're playing with a toy. And you say, don't you want to get your work? Well, I do want to get my work done. Do you want to get good grades? Yeah, I really want to get good grades. Well, then you need to put the toy down. And you come back an hour later and they're still playing with the toy. So what will you do? You're going to slap them, huh? I'm glad you're not Krishna. What will you do? You'll take the toy away. Very simple. Does that mean you're not taking care of your child? You understand? So, or, you know, if you're a sports coach and someone's coming to you and say, I want to be a, whatever, cricket star. And every time they come to practice, they've got a candy bar in their bag. And you say, if you keep eating this candy bar, you can't become a cricket star. You might just take it out of their bag sometime. You might say, hey, you know, am I your coach or not? Give me that. Does that mean you're not taking care of them? No. That's how you're taking care of them. So Krishna's saying that that applies to people who are stubbornly refusing. That's the tenth offense. You know what the tenth offense on chanting is? To maintain material attachments even after understanding so many instructions on this matter. So it may get to a point in some cases where Krishna just takes that thing away that's impeding our progress. So that's not harming us, that's facilitating us. That's actually giving us what we need. But he doesn't do that to everybody, and he doesn't do that to everybody all the time. He does it in select cases to certain people with certain things. If a person, you know, is saying, yes, yes, I want to do this, Krishna, I want to do this, Krishna, I want to say, okay, if you want to do this, then you have to give this up. Like Narada Muni with the hunter, with the bow, where Narada said to the hunter, you know, you're going to suffer for killing the animals. And the hunter said, how can I get relief? And Narada said, I'll tell you if you throw away your bow. And he said, well, if I throw away my bow, how will I live? And Narada said, I'll take care of that, just throw away your bow. But in Krishna's case, sometimes if someone's really sincere and devoted, but they can't get, you know, they're just refusing to get rid of something, he may externally take away that thing to help the devotee see that, wait a minute, that wasn't really helping me. You know, if your kid was just sitting around playing computer games, you might lock up the computer. And you know, the child might come and thank you, say, oh, thank you, now I can concentrate on my work. Some people do that to themselves. Some people, you know, they lock up the cake, or if they want to lose weight, you understand? They remove the thing externally as an aid. That's not ultimately, you know, you still have to make a decision to let go of the attachment. The Krishna may help that way.
It is true in the case of Prabhupada.
Well, of course, when we're talking about Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada described it like that for himself, but I don't think that we should take it that's... And Prabhupada genuinely thought like that about himself, but I don't think that we should take it like that. I don't think that we should take it that Srila Prabhupada had some material attachment that Krishna had to grab away. But Prabhupada described himself like that. That was his simple and natural humility. And why did Krishna deal like that with Srila Prabhupada? I'm sure that there's many reasons. We'd have to ask Krishna himself what his reasons are. But one of them, obviously, was to glorify Srila Prabhupada. Because Prabhupada accomplished a world mission with no money, with no support of any institution. The Gaudiya Math Institution did not support him, nor did he have the support of any institution in America. With basically no contacts in America. I mean, he didn't really know anybody there that helped him. The Gopal Agarwal and Dr. Mishra didn't really help him significantly or in any meaningful way. What did he have? He had his first printed Bhagavatams. They were printed in India. You know, now you can get really nice printing done in India, but in those days, if you've seen the original Bhagavatams, the paper was not good quality, the printing was all slanted, the spelling and grammar were wrong, which is why Prabhupada wanted people to... He was so happy when Hayagriva came, an English professor who could help him. And the artists, and you know, the first books were not like what we have now with these beautiful paintings and first-class layout. It wasn't like that. And that Srila Prabhupada could start a movement with materially nothing, not one of the things that you would think would be required to start a movement. I mean, how many of us would start a worldwide movement with some badly printed books and no money and no friends and no shelter or no association? So that way we can see that Prabhupada's ability to start the movement was not coming from any material arrangement. So I see that Krishna took away all the material arrangements so we could see it was by Prabhupada's purity. It wasn't because he knew some rich person or he had some connection with this thing or that thing. And also to give us an example that when we're doing service for Krishna, we don't necessarily have to be dependent on all these external arrangements. We can just be dependent on Krishna. Krishna didn't. I'm sure Krishna has another 1,000 reasons why he did it. Maybe he'll tell us someday. But I'm sure it wasn't because Prabhupada had some sort of material attachment. But anyway, he saw it. Prabhupada said, "Oh, I was too attached to my family and too attached to my business, so Krishna took it away." That's the natural mood of the devotee. And Prabhupada would sometimes say, of course, Prabhupada went for about 9 years where he was living in poverty in India. But Prabhupada would often say, you know, I gave up my 5 children and now I got 5,000 children. So that's also there. And sometimes Krishna also tests the devotee to glorify the devotee. Like the story of Gopinath Patanayaka, where he's put up on the platform to be thrown on the swords. And later, his whole debt is excused, and he's given a double salary, and he's given a high position. So that may also be. Krishna wants to show that the devotee is dedicated in both happiness and distress. I mean, I think that most of us could say in our lives, if we're honest, that the time that Krishna's taken away, that he's always given something better, and it's always been for a better purpose in the long run. Something that, it's hard to put a gift in someone's hand when their hand is full of something. And sometimes when Krishna has something wonderful to give you, he kind of first pulls away what's in your hand. Okay. Is there anything else? Otherwise, well, yes, I'll take one more. And then we'll end. Yes?
When I heard about when we chant Hare Krishna, or constantly remember Krishna, all calamities go away. So it's like reassured and confident and feeling very good. But on the way back, one question was haunting my mind again and again, that devotees face calamities, like examine, the calamity word may not apply for them on the level of devotees like Ahindra Prabhu, Bhagavan Krishna Maharaj, the way they left their body. What would be the explanation? Like they are always in the platform of, you
know, all of us have to leave our body.
No, but the, you know, the way they faced it, not leaving the body, you know, like those who seem to be in mundane way of thinking, it was a great, something unexpected. So how would we define that when, you know, like newcomers come and
unexpected ask? Is foolishness. All of us should expect that we're going to have to leave this body.
No, I mean to say calamities, like it seemed like...
How is it a calamity? All of us here have to leave our body.
Even
that, that's not a calamity. The body, you know, there's one of the hellish planets where you have to swim in a river of blood and hair and mucus, and that's what we're doing right now. If you're picked up from that river, how is that a calamity? How is being released from a material body a calamity? I don't understand that.
I mean to say, it looks all, it doesn't apply for devotees, it's transcendental, undoubtedly, but, you know, like...
It doesn't really apply to anybody.
Sudden accident, or unexpected.
That's from a point of view of falsity. So why are people upset when someone has a sudden death before they're old? Because, oh, then they didn't get a chance to fulfill all their plans and do everything they wanted and enjoy everything in the world. If your master calls you from one room of the house to another room of the house, how is that a calamity? Whether your master says, okay, I'd like to see you in my room in 10 minutes, or whether your master says, I come right this minute, what does it matter? Why is one a calamity more than the other?
Like no devotees were prepared. It's like all of a sudden. You know?
That's not just who's prepared, who's not prepared. How can we say? How can we say?
Can I?
But just like, you know, if we're a Prabhupada's servant and he's in that room and he rings his bell and says, come in 10 minutes, or he says, come right now. Why is come right now a calamity? And everyone has to die. The body's going to die. Why do we want to stay in this nasty body anyway? If Krishna wants me to do service in this nasty body, fine. If he wants me to do service in another circumstance, fine. What does it matter whether I'm in the body or out of the body? It just doesn't matter. if I do service in a car or I get out of the car and do service. It doesn't matter. There's no meaning. Seeing it as this or that is a calamity. Like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said when Sanatana Goswami had that disease, he said, there's no, this idea of good and bad in this world is all illusion. This is a good thing, this is a bad thing. It's good if Krishna's happy. I'm a servant. So from the point of view of falsity, something may appear to be a calamity. But we all have to leave this body. That's given. For one who's born, death is certain. We're all going to have to leave this body. Absolutely. So if that's a calamity, then it's a calamity for everybody. I don't think it's a, personally, I don't think it's a calamity. I don't think that staying in this body is a very wonderful thing. I really don't. I mean, staying in a bag of skin with stool and mucus and worms and hair and doesn't sound to me like very attractive. And it seems to me like getting out of it might be a lot, but staying in it might be more of a calamity than getting out.
No, leaving body doesn't matter. I mean, leaving body is very natural, but, unexpected way that it works.
But unexpected is foolishness, because we should all expect. How can you say unexpected? If you're unexpected, you're a fool. Everybody here should expect. You're going to die. This body's going to die, and we don't die. Expect that the body's going to die. Expect it. How can death be unexpected? If death is unexpected, you're a fool.
It seems to be untimely.
How is there untimely? It's Krishna's time. It's untimely. So if right now you heard Srila Prabhupada's bell ringing through the other room, and what's your name?
Vijay Krishna.
Vijay Krishna. So if you heard Prabhupada's bell and you heard Prabhupada's voice, Vijay Krishna, please come here right now. Would you say, no, Prabhupada, it's untimely? Of course not. Yes, Srila Prabhupada, how can I serve you? And if you have to go in the other room to serve him, so you have to go in the other room. No, Prabhupada, I will only serve you in this room. I won't go in the other room. He said, no, I need you to come in that room. Okay, go in that room. So maybe in this room you were doing something. Now nobody's doing something. But maybe you're doing something. You're making a flower garland. Prabhupada rings his bell. Vijay Krishna, you come right now. But Prabhupada, I want to finish my flower garland. No, right now you come. Krishna wants you to come. Come. What is the question? That's his business whether the flower garland gets finished or not. He's, you're concerned. You're a servant. How is that a calamity? If our master says, I want you to do this now, or I want you to do this now, how is that a calamity? We're servants.
If we can tell that the bodies of a devotee is not just the bag of skin full of nasty things, but maybe the body of devotees are spiritualized, purified, spiritualized due to long practice, long spiritual
that is
practices,
true.
And it becomes so pure. And what about Srimad Bhagavatam, about Rishabhadev, when he was passing stool,
it was fragrant. But that doesn't mean that the devotee is anxious to stay in his body. The devotee is a servant. So if Krishna has service for him to do in that body, that's fine. If Krishna has service for him to do in a different body, that's fine. If Krishna has service for him to do in the spiritual world, in the spiritual body, that's fine. And none of that's a calamity.
I'm not able to express actually what I'm asking, in words. It's not while leaving. Krishna has his own time. We should get out of this body. This is all understood. And this is not actually what I'm asking.
Okay.
I can't put it in words,
So maybe think about it a little more and maybe
because
next time you can ask.
Calamity is actually how do you define calamity.
Exactly. Calamity is how you define calamity. So for a materialistic person who wants to enjoy the body in this world, then any death is a calamity. Even death by old age and disease with 10 years of notice is a calamity. And the 10 years of notice is a calamity, and the death is a calamity, and everything is a calamity. And for the devotee, nothing is a calamity. So, a little baby, you have children? So do you remember before your babies could crawl, when they could just sit? If you would walk from one room to the other, they would cry. Because they don't understand that this room is connected to that room. So when you walk out the door, as far as they're concerned, you've gone to Mars. They don't understand that there's a passageway connecting the rooms. And once the baby can crawl, then they don't do that anymore because they understand and they can even follow you. So for the materialistic person, they don't understand that we're eternal. But for the spiritualist, we understand we're eternal. And for an advanced devotee who's actually realized their eternal position, it really doesn't matter. But for anybody, it doesn't matter. We're eternal beings. So we understand somebody dying and that they're moving from one room to the next. And if they're advanced devotee, they're doing that in cooperation with the Lord and in happiness.
I understand from within what you are saying, but when on the newspaper it comes, such and such sannyasi faced such a kind of accident, and then you have to answer, this accident is transcendental, Krishna made it. You know, how do we answer that?
Just what I said.
I just want to mention that it's actually connected to attaining the supreme chapter.
Because in that chapter, attaining the supreme, it said that yogi, by his own effort, dies at certain...
Yes.
But that's the greatness of the devotee, because he gives up that.
He gives that to Krishna.
It's up to Krishna. Krishna is...
Oh, very nice.
Car accident,
very nice. Very nice. Thank you. I really like that point. Yeah, that the yogi is trying to control that. The yogi is trying to control when I leave my body. And I'm going to regulate the breathing and the heartbeat, so I'll stay in my body longer, and then I'll leave my body at an auspicious time and get help from the devatas and do this and do that. And the devotee is just, Krishna, whenever you want to call me, however you want to call me. Whenever and however, it doesn't matter. You know, if Krishna calls you by a letter or a phone call or a tap on the shoulder, it doesn't matter. And one's not nice and one's a calamity.
Yeah, this is the word, however.
However. Yeah, whenever, however, wherever, where it may be. Prabhupada was happy to die in the battlefield in London, you know. And Prabhupada was at the last moments and practically, physically not able to do anything. He went to London. He said, let me die on the battlefield. And then he saw you. He wasn't able physically to do that anymore, and he came back here to Vrindavan. But even wherever, it's glorious to die on the battlefield. So it is, yeah, at a very nice point. The devotee is leaving everything up to Krishna. Whatever, you know, Krishna, I'm just going to serve you, and whatever, it doesn't matter how your message comes.
But for us, we are dependent on them, that we feel separation.
That's true.
So we don't want this.
Well, that's true. That's true. But that's love. That's love. That, you know, I'm not able in my present consciousness to have immediate physical association with that person anymore, and therefore I feel sad. You know, then of course I can associate with that person through meditation, because everyone's eternal. So therefore I feel that separation. That's another thing. But I'm also a servant. And if Krishna says, okay, you go here and you go there, then I also accept that. That sometimes I may be able to serve in the same room with people that I love, and sometimes I may be in another room. And that's... I accept that as a servant. Okay, it is 6:30, so...
Yeah.
It's very fast, yeah.
Can I speak?
Yes, but can you make it fast, because I want to end at 6:30 and it is 6:30.
I have heard from saintly persons that the time of death is fixed, the place of death is fixed, and region of death is fixed, because the Lord Krishna has yogamaya computers. They are not crazy computers, they are perfect computers.
Ah, very nice, very nice. Yeah, so for most people, the time and place and manner of death is fixed.
When Jyotishthi makes kundalini, he writes everything. It's here in India. He can also, you know, can give the prediction how many years you are going to live. That's when Kundli is going to write, they have everything mentioned. Nobody is not perfectly, but just as one take birth, everything is mentioned.
Anyway, what's more important is that we just fix on trying to please Krishna and yogic shema bahamiham. Let him take care of the gain and protection of this body. That's our happiness should come from the fact that I'm connected with Krishna. My happiness shouldn't come from, you know, how long am I staying in this body.
And it is not the matter that Indra Prabhu, how he left his body, but how, where did he go?
Yes.
That is most important.
That is important. I mean, you could say a sudden accident is better because then there's no long illness and there's no, I mean, you know. that's, how can we say? Okay, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you.